was here to see the Shire, or more accurately, see the set of the Shire that had been built into the lush greenery of the New Zealand landscape. But I found myself on a bit of a detour, swimming in a lake, enjoying the cool water on a hot summer day. I had swam towards the middle of the lake when I looked back towards shore and noticed something I hadn't seen when I had arrived. It looked like a cave, partially submerged, and it was right around the corner of an outcropping near the shore that tons of other tourists were hanging out on. I decided to swim over to see what it was, and as I got closer, I realized that the cave was actually quite deep and that the vegetation partially obscuring the mouth of the cave wasn't really going to let me see deeply into it. I swam a bit closer, treaded water for a bit, and considered my options. I figured exploring a cave in a foreign country is usually bad news no matter how cool it might be, so I swam back to shore to towel off. I told my traveling companions about the cave and they were about to set off to get a glimpse of the cave themselves, when suddenly I saw a giant ripple in the water. Something huge, perhaps the size of a whale, was slicing through the water at an incredible pace. And I watched in horror as a giant lizard thing raised its head out of the water and chomped down on a swimmer. I gasped, my brain still not catching up to what I had witnessed, and then the screaming started. Another swimmer and then another were pulled under by that thing, and I grabbed my backpack and began to run back towards the rental car. Before I could even take a few steps, the creature erupted out of the lake and this giant monstrosity began to gobble up people on the beach, its speed on land just as fast as its speed in the water. I knew I would never be able to outrun it. I just stood there in shock, dropped my backpack, and watched as the beach was filled with terror and screams. As the lizard-like creature began to turn towards me, its mouth dripping with gore, my friend grabbed me and shouted, "My name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast." Hotupuku was a Taniwha, a category of large supernatural creatures from the watery depths in Maori mythology, which either took on the form of sharks or whales in the ocean, and more like giant tuatara if it was inland. And at this point you might be thinking, well, what the heck is a tuatara? And I definitely asked myself that, and holy shiz, after googling these things, I am a fan of these little creatures. So tuatara are native to New Zealand, and they're sort of a cross, kind of between like an iguana's head and its spines, and a Komodo dragon's posture. I don't know if that's a great representation of it, but Google it, they look cool, and I kinda want one. Anyway, Hotupuku is the name of one of these latter tuatara resembling Taniwha, and it was covered in warts and spines. This giant, whale-sized lizard was super strong and fast in that no man could outrun it, and its mouth was large enough to devour a human when it caught it. The story goes that travelers between two villages began to disappear, and when a party went to go investigate, Hotupuku smelled the human meat smell, emerged from its cage that it had built its den in, and, surprising these investigators, ate a bunch of them. However, it didn't eat all of them, and they eventually came back and told their tale. And in response, a hero named Pitaka gathered a brave group of hunters and a really long piece of rope, some weapons, and off they went. They decided to braid the rope into a giant noose, and they set a trap for Hotupuku. Eventually, the fastest and bravest of the men, including Pitaka, approached the cave to lure out the giant lizard thing. And sure enough, Hotupuku shoots out from the cave to chase the men. The human bait ran as fast as they could through the enormous noose, and when Hotupuku entered, the rest of the crew yoinked super hard, and Hotupuku was suspended in the air, hanged until it died. So Hotupuku, with all of its speed, strength, and size, falls to the ingenuity of a trap that preyed on its singular focus on eating humans. You might say that it suffered from short-sightedness, and that is what I want to talk about today. or more specifically, how you might avoid falling to your own short-sightedness. I've talked about before how I'm personally very easily distracted, I have many interests, and are sometimes all over the place. And I don't want to seem like I'm justifying my way of living, but I do want to advocate for flexibility, because I think that is a solid way to avoid the short-sightedness about being obsessed with a single particular outcome or goal. And while goals and focus aren't bad things at all, if you're not able to take a step back and see the forest for the trees, you might be missing out on potential solutions, innovations, and other paths that might actually accelerate you getting to your goal. After all, when we get too hyper-focused on a goal, we tend to focus extremely closely on solutions that have worked for others before. But proven paths aren't necessarily the fastest or the most efficient ones, and it sometimes takes innovation and creativity and a little bit of risk tolerance to be able to forge a brand new path that may lay the groundwork for everyone else after you. So, what does it take to take a step backwards and zoom out a bit? One thing starts with recognizing our own tendencies to zoom in and get in our own ruts of thinking. If we don't come to terms with the fact that we're always going to be fighting our own bias towards our own experiences and familiarity, we'll be stuck in a singular way of thinking. By acknowledging that this is most of our tendencies, we can expect this behavior and build systems to help us stay flexible. And you might think that systems by nature are rigid, but you can actually build flexibility and nuance into them. Designing flexible systems might seem complex or difficult, but it's really just building more possibilities into the systems in the first place. For example, creating a fail-safe system for getting too bogged down with perfection might be to create a timer for any given problem. By setting a rigorous, self-imposed deadline that, upon hitting, you have to go get additional help or resources, you will be forced to optimize your process, get comfortable with asking for help, and or learn to be okay with great as opposed to perfect. And this leads me to the core idea that defeats short-sightedness, and that is humility. Because being humble keeps you open to new ideas. And because you know that you don't know everything, you are open that someone else could easily have engineered a better solution than yourself. This goes back to the getting help deadline, because at the end of the day, having humility allows you to easily ask for help with pretty much anything. And believe me, as the quote-unquote gifted child in my family, I really hated asking for help. But I've since learned that being gifted, smart, capable, or whatever other story of value that I or you might tell yourself about being able to do things alone, it's all totally ridiculous. Doing things alone is nice, but why do it alone if doing it with others would make it so much easier? For example, I think about the toxic masculinity I used to subscribe to about carrying heavy things, and how being dumb about things like that would lead to injuries of all sorts. It's like, why not just do things as a team and stay healthy and fit and not hurt yourself? Teamwork makes the dream work, and understanding and living this makes life better for everyone involved, believe me. So, to help you avoid tunnel vision, it really helps to get humble and to ask for outside opinions. This is especially true if you're building something that's going to be used, bought, or consumed by others. When you're doing research for a product, using empathy is great, but actually asking and listening to other people can really clear up misconceptions and false assumptions that you might have made. Nothing tells you whether or not your product lands better than actually offering it for sale. But so often we run research by asking our friends and family, who are incredibly biased in our favor, what they think about our ideas, rather than ask our target audience to pony up some cash. Part of this recruiting others and doing the research, however, is knowing how to listen. I've seen too many instances where a leader asks for feedback, but their mind has already been made. or if they haven't already made up their mind, they're still open to overruling the opinion of others. A very public example of this is when a British science organization asked for the internet to pitch and vote on a new name for their giant research vessel. And when Bodhi McBoatface emerged as the victor, they decided to change the name anyway. Weak, right? That not only upsets people, but it also proves that you're not trustworthy. After all, just because you don't like the outcome, if you ask for a vote on something, you live with it. That's what good leaders do. So if you're going to ask for feedback, make sure you're willing to hear that the product doesn't work, or that the color is wrong for the audience, or maybe your idea is actually a bad one after all. Humility, once again, and remember that what you like and what you think is best only matters to you. What's actually best is always contextual and is going to be decided by the lens of the beholder. So being humble and open to feedback of others is awesome, but sometimes you may have to make a decision for yourself by yourself. Well, what to do then? If the more obvious solution of relying on others to help you calibrate is gone, how do you trust in yourself knowing that you have a tendency to do things a certain way? Well, if your only resource is yourself, and honestly, I think this is actually rarely true, then it's time to make sure that you have a diversity of ideas to choose from, and not just the normal way that you'd solve the problem. Brainstorming and doing massive idea generation is really a great way to break the bounds of your usual thinking and stretch your creativity to the max. If you have maybe 3 competing ideas of how to move forward, try to come up with 25 or 50 more ideas. The more ridiculous I find, the better, because by embracing the far-fetched, silly, stupid, terrible ideas and letting those flow, you A, might find a ridiculous solution that actually works, and B, might get all of that out of the way, but give you the inspiration for a more tried and true method that you never thought might work in this context. I remember back in 2007 when Radiohead released their In Rainbows album directly to the internet and set it as a pay what you can pre-order. I was sure they'd lose tons of money on the album, as I was coming from my own limited belief of being a broke recent graduate who decided to pay a dollar for it. And while the pay what you can model was primarily bought at a lower price, a vast majority of fans ended up opting for the limited edition supersets. And I'm happy to report that my own short-sightedness at the time was incorrect, and looking at digital sales alone, it ended up bringing in more money than all digital sales combined for Radiohead's previous 7 albums. Of course, Radiohead could have lost tons of money on that gamble, but the point is that they were willing to look outside the box to at least try something new and untested, and previously thought to be completely ridiculous of an idea. Regardless of the outcome, the decision to rethink how they could serve their fans stemmed from their ability to completely reframe how a band of their popularity could do things with or without a record label. So maybe this is all just an extension from last episode's riff on adaptability, but by understanding our own propensity for short-sightedness, building flexible systems around us, and being humble, we might be able to not only dodge obvious traps waiting for us, but we might also learn how to thrive. Where might you be stuck in short-sightedness? And what would it look like to start exploring new ways of solving problems? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a monstrous day.